entertaining the annual report from Eskom. I understand the CEO will take us through the report, but as before that, the chairperson would want to lead on the discussion and give an overview, and then allow the CEO to take us through whichever way will suit us. So over to you.
Thank you very much.
It looks like Chair is getting older. You see, you pressed something there, Chair. I can see your hair.
If, Comrade Kosinati, if you allowed your hair to grow, they would also be able to see that it's the same color as mine. I was saying that it's a pleasure to be here once again towards the end of the session for this year, parliamentary session, and knowing also that members are have to stay behind on a Friday and would have preferred to be out in their branches at this time because of the tremendous amount of energy that is being generated towards the Limpopo conference. We wish we could harness that energy to assist us in the shortage of electricity in the country.
I'll quickly introduce the delegation here. On my left is Jacob Morocco, who's the newly appointed chief executive of Eskom. I say newly appointed, although he appeared to be made this year, he was new to the committee. He was not the chief executive when we met him last. Mr. Maroha replaces Lani Sabato, who has been chief executive for 8 years. Just for those of you who may not be aware, Mr. Maroha was appointed after the embarked upon a national and international search process for a new chief executive of Lani. And we engaged institutions that specialize in searching for companies that can occupy posts like this. And it took us about 8 months to press full post. But we had early warnings that we knew that the previous chief executive after 8 years did not intend to renew our contract. Jacob is not new to Eskom. He is in Eskom now for I think 12 years. He is by training an electrical engineer, graduate of this university. Prior to becoming chief executive, Jacob headed up the distribution division of Eskom, and after that he headed up the transmission division, which also included what he referred to as it's my pleasure to introduce Jacob to you today, and he will present to you the annual report. From my right hand side, he is a face more familiar to you, from Lani Wababa, who is the financial director of Eskom, and he has been in this position for 3 years now. Let me thank you for having made the time to give us the opportunity to present the annual report in the different schedule. Of course, the year ended mid-year this year, and although we are presenting at this stage, I think it is not fair too early or too late to make the presentation. The first thing to say is that you will notice that Eskom has received an unqualified audit from the independent external party.
country. The capital expenditure that was planned for the year that we are reporting on has been on target. In fact, every year the capital expenditure has been on target and at times slightly above target also. It was during this period that the new power stations were brought into commission. On the picture behind us there, the open cycle gas turbine power stations, which have been built in Atlantis and in Mossel Bay. Each of these are 500 megawatt power stations. They were built and brought into commission in a period of 18 months, which is quite a record in many ways. If you think about what it would take you to build and complete a house, including the kitchen fittings, you would know that this is a very short time in which to build a 4 billion rand power station. One of the big things that the board is attending to is to oversee the governance of the capital expenditure that's taking place presently. Just to give you an example, the new power station, which is called Medupi, which is being built in Lephalale, comes at the cost of 78 billion rand. And the company has just awarded contracts for boilers and turbines to the tune of about 60 billion rand. And those announcements would be made by the relevant people in the company when the time comes. But these are the largest scale contracts that are being awarded in the South African economy in an entire generation. In fact, in the next 5 years, Eskom would have a capex spend alone of between 150 and 200 billion rand. There is no other period in South Africa's history where power production capacity was being laid out on the scale. In the next 25 years, there would be an investment in the electricity industry of between 1 and 1.2 trillion rand. What all of this means is that Eskom needs to have the highest possible level of governance that one can put in place. And I'm pleased to say that we have a rather adequate board of directors. Among the board of directors are three international members, one of which is Lars Josephson, who is the chief executive officer of the Swedish electricity utility. We also have Brian Count, who is the retired chief executive officer of the British electricity utility. And then we have Mustafa Bello, who is the chief investment officer of the Nigerian government. So we have the reason why we think it's good to have international members on the board is because Eskom does not have any peer in South Africa, and it's very difficult to get relevant experience from the South African economy as far as Eskom leadership is concerned. We've also been strengthening the various board committees that deals with the governance matters. The Investment and Finance Committee of the board, which recommends investment decisions to the board, is chaired by Wendy Lucas-Bull, who is the former chief executive of First National Bank. The Audit Committee is chaired by Jacob Modise, who is a chartered accountant and also a former business leader in his own right. And we have just been able to persuade the former Auditor General, Shokat Faki, to serve as an independent non-executive on the Audit Committee of the Eskom Board. And I'm just giving you some examples. The rest of the information is in the annual report. But to give you the assurance that no stone is left unturned in order to ensure that we have a proper and systematic process as we go forward. The plans as we go forward, I think, are generally in place. Some of the big issues that the board is concerning itself with right now and applying its mind to is, apart from the laying on of new capacity, is what do we do about the fact that the country has a demand for electricity that is greater than the available supply. Every year, because of the growth of the economy and the relative affluence, growth in the affluence of the population, every year we can expect that the demand for electricity will grow even more. However, it takes quite a long time to lay on new base load generation capacity. What you see here behind us, the OCGT, is the open cycle gas turbine, is what we refer to as peak generation capacity, and what the MPs would know as a backup generator. That's what it is. This House Parliament has a backup generator, which is run on diesel. And when the lights go on, it kicks in. So that's what this is. It's not run all of the time. When we're short of power, we fire these up. And although they are very big mega structures, they can be fired up within 15 minutes. And that's the advantage of it. They run on diesel, which is about the most expensive fuel that you can use to run a power station. And it's for that reason that they only run for short periods. Sometimes they fire up for about an hour, sometimes for 2 hours, just depending on what the extent of the shortage is. But what the country really needs is base load generation capacity, which means big power stations of 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 megawatt capacity. These are power stations that take an extremely long period to lay on. The regulatory work around the new power stations takes about a period of about 48 months, which is more or less the international norm. Doing all of the environmental work, the environmental impact assessments, rezoning, and the range of permissions and licensing that from various authorities that are needed, takes a period of about 4 years, and then it would take anywhere between 4 and 7 years for the construction to be done, or perhaps even longer to bring it into commission. So the first new base load power station will be commissioned in 2012. And until then, we will be a country that will be demanding more than we can generate. And so this is a matter which the board is attending its mind to, about how do you deal with that situation, and how do we cope with it best. It's not a unique problem as far as the world is concerned, and many others have had similar problems to have had, and many people would say it's a good problem to have, that the economy is demanding more and more power. It means that something good is happening in the economy. But it does mean that it's quite a serious situation that will have to be managed. Another matter which the board is concerned about is the question of global warming and climate change. And as we are all aware that in terms of the Kyoto Protocol, South Africa is not an annex country and therefore does not have obligatory emission reduction targets. But from an ESCOM point of view, we have to take into account that the projects which we are implementing now are multi-generational. A big power station has a useful lifespan of between 15 and 17 years. And will still be at work long after the summer of 2009, enjoying ourselves in heaven. And so the decisions that we take are extremely serious decisions. And we've got to try to think about what's the what the regulatory regime would be like in 30 years' time, and what the responsible thing to do is. And this is a matter that is not an easy matter to address, because 95% of our power is generated by low-cost, high-emission coal. But nonetheless, it's a challenge that we have to address. We're giving the matter quite serious thought. And we're hoping that when we report to you next year, we would be able to put forward a scenario from an ESCOM point of view as to how you see this. And basically, the scenario would have to be saying something like, at some point in time, the electricity industry, not talking about a country at all, but we can talk about the industry, because ESCOM is more or less the industry. More or less the same thing right now. Hopefully that will change as we go forward. But the industry has to, the industry's greenhouse gas emissions has to peak at some point and then it turns down. And that's the calculation that we have to design for you right now. And then, of course, there's the new source of energy and the new technology that we are applying our minds. This thing goes off all the time, Professor. The new technologies, and these are primarily, as far as coal is concerned, to look at cleaner coal technologies, and the new coal-fired power stations will be supercritical and will be more efficient, and will be producing less CO2 emissions per megawatt generated. But more importantly than that is to look at technologies that substantially reduce the carbon footprint. And here it is a whole range of technologies. The one is nuclear technology, which is presently under feasibility studies that are taking place in ESCOM. An announcement will be made in that regard by government, I'm quite certain, next year. The other is renewable technologies. We have now completed the research on wind power in the Western Cape, and an investment decision has been taken to proceed with the construction of a wind farm, a 100 megawatt wind farm, and we have already started doing work on doubling that. So that's one that's going on. And then, of course, the main area, in our view, that will make a big difference as far as renewables is concerned is solar. The emerging view is that solar energy will probably make the biggest impact of all renewable sources in a country like South Africa. And then lastly, to make the point, and that is about energy efficiency. Energy efficiency is a matter that as a country we will have to take much more seriously for a number of reasons. Of course, from an environmental point of view, to reduce our carbon footprint. From the point of view that because of the shortage of energy, we just have to use less. That's not a complicated thing to understand. Less of something, you can't use more. But then also, in order to ensure that production processes, standards for appliances, etc., in South Africa, building standards, keep up with global trends and remain competitive. In a situation where you have, as we have had, extremely low-cost electricity, if you look at the next lowest cost in the world, you will see that we provide extremely low cost, and this is not a word being used in exaggeration for effect.
It is extremely low. In such a situation,
most people actually do not know what the electricity consumption of the appliances they use is, because the marginal difference doesn't make too much of an impact on their lifestyle. And this introduces a lack of competitiveness, inefficiencies, etc. So this area of energy efficiency, and we're not here to talk about that in a big way today, but in the year 2008, it is certainly my view that it's going to take on major national importance. We're doing quite a great deal of groundwork on that. But having said that, I would like to hand over to the Chief Executive to present to you the annual results.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, members of the committee, for the opportunity to present the EFCOM annual results to the joint sitting of the two committees. As the chairman has already indicated, the results are for the period 2006-2007, ending 2007 March. The areas we'll cover will be the results of the shareholder compact, our financial performance, performance related to customers, performance related to learning, growth and social, internal business processes and initiatives, and we'll make some conclusions. In as far as the shareholder compact is concerned, first maybe to explain what the shareholder compact is. Between ourselves and the Department of Public Enterprise, annually we go into an agreement on the aspects which we need to perform on, and that is articulated in what is called a shareholder compact. This is then signed off and committed to by our board and also agreed to by our minister. For the period that we are reporting, let's to say that we have achieved and exceeded in most of all the aspects we committed to. The only area that we have had challenges is the area of major incidences that relate to power system outages. And we will be talking a little more about those, but that relates to the interruptions and outages that we've had during this financial year. However, when you look at the aspect of maintained capital and financial efficiency, we've done very well, invest in infrastructure, we have achieved those, maintaining operating efficiency and effectiveness. Other than the major incidences, we have met all those aspects, and the focus on skills and development, the very important aspects today in the context of this huge capital expansion that we are undertaking, that we also met that particular objective. We will be using the recommended framework on reporting this, the balanced scorecard. We will talk about the financial aspects, the customer aspects, the internal business processes, and the learning and growth and social aspects. In the center is our vision as EFCOM. Our vision is together building the power base for sustainable growth and development. And I think it's a vision that talks to where our country is and where we are going. On the financial aspects, I will highlight what I consider to be the most aspect of the financial overview. Firstly, our revenue the annum now has crossed the 40 billion mark. Our profit up before embedded derivatives, and if it's required, I'll explain what embedded derivatives are. But our clean profit for the previous year was 3.4 billion. Our cash generated from operations, 14.8 billion. But what is important, and the chairman has highlighted this, the capital expenditure was 17.7 billion, up from 10 billion the year before. This is indicating the ramp up of our capital expansion. And I'll also give you more detail when you look at the total value of this capital expansion over the next 20 years. Our total asset base currently 143, grown from 128 the year previously. The electricity growth, the electricity sales growth, close to 5%, 4.9%, up from 0.8 the year before. And as we look the next 20 years, we are seeing or we forecasting an annual growth of 4%. And if that changes to a higher growth, it will impact on the total capex that will be employed. So to summarize in terms of the financial performance, we consider the financial year we're reporting to have a sound financial performance, and the underlying financial health of Eskom is still sound. It's also confirmed by our issuing of bonds, which was largely oversubscribed. We had gone to borrow money in Europe and in South Africa, and the response of investors to our borrowing program has been very, very pleasing indeed. That underlines the view of international and local investors on the financial health of Eskom. However, as we go forward and look at this huge capital expansion, there are issues that we need to deal with to maintain this very healthy financial performance. Graphically, just showing where we come from in comparison to the year we are reporting, starting with group profit, we've seen a healthy profit. In this year, the yellow part shows what we call the clean profit. If you add embedded derivatives, it goes beyond 6 billion. But the embedded derivatives is actually what we call funny money, in the sense that it reflects the accounting treatment of some of the long-term contracts that we've undertaken, particularly with the commodity customers, aluminium smelters in particular, where the new accounting standards require that we need to value those long-term contracts and put them either in our balance sheet or our income statement, depending on the variability of the foreign exchange and the price of aluminium. And if it's required, we can go into detail of how that is done. But we do not see embedded derivatives as the underlying business performance of the company, but we need to report it in that particular fashion. The capital expenditure, you could see coming from 2002, just below 6 billion, to the year we're reporting, where we're going into 17 billion per annum capital expenditure. And in this current financial year that we're going to report at the beginning of next year, we will be spending an estimated amount between 20 and 25 billion. And that will be going up as the capital expansion ramps up. The debt equity ratio, which is one of the aspects that investors look at in terms of the underlying financial health of our enterprise, has been sound. The the debt equity ratio, as it goes down, is a good measure that we having less debt compared to our equity, but it's beginning to pick up, and it's picking up in tandem with our capital expansion program. We're beginning to borrow more money, and that will ramp up in the next few years. The return on total asset is also a measure that investors look at it in evaluating the underlying performance of the enterprise, and that is beginning to decline, that our return compared to our assets is beginning to decline, and it's also a measure we're concerned about, because a certain threshold beyond which creditors begin to be worried. Socioeconomic, our Vanguard socioeconomic program is electrification. In the previous year, we electrified 162,000
new households. Since 1991, we have electrified 3.4 million, and the other
program that we have made significant progress on is the provision of free basic electricity, where we collaborate with municipalities to deliver this basic service to customers. 97% of municipalities are now participating in collaboration with ourselves. Electricity prices, our chairman has indicated this, every year we do a benchmark comparison of how we compare with other countries in the world on electricity prices, particularly industrial prices. In the previous year, when we reported we were 30% cheaper than Australia, which was the next competitor, this year the benchmark shows that we are 74% cheaper than Canada, which is the next competitor. That indicates that our prices are still very, very competitive. However, with the capital expansion, the prices will go up, but because the gap is still big, we believe that we'll hold this competitive position for some time to come. When we came to the Minerals Energy Committee this year and talked about pricing, there was also a request to do a benchmark study with the study countries, which we have done. The right-hand graph shows us that even if you compare with our neighbors, South Africa is still very competitive. And this talks to the issues we're talking about around bringing up the tariffs to the level which will assist us as a country to be able to absorb this huge capital expansion. In terms of the supply and demand, this is an issue that we're going to be talking about for the next 5 to 8 years. Currently, our reserve margin is the spare capacity between what is required and the capacity that we have. Spare capacity is important to cushion any unplanned outages, any problems that we have in the system. It's like a spare wheel that we have in the system. In case one of your wheels is flat, you can use a spare wheel. And in the power system, if you do not have enough reserve money, events that in the past would not have caused customer problems are now beginning to do that. We made the reserve margin in percentages. We now 10%, less than 10% in terms of reserve margin. Our aspiration is 15%. We are running our power station much harder because of the demand. That puts stress on the maintenance of those power stations, and it also makes them vulnerable to unplanned events. A number of our generation units have been built in the period of the 70s to mid-80s. They are now in what we call midlife, and they require major plant maintenance and refurbishment. Some key transmission corridors are constrained. Of note is the Cape Corridor. As you would know, and we've reported to the committees that in the Cape, there isn't significant baseload station other than Quebec. And when you look at the demand of the Cape, most of what is required here has to be transported via long distances in transmission corridors to the Cape. And those corridors are constrained due to the demand that we've seen in the past few years. The other corridor that we see as constraints is the corridor to KZN. At the KZN, we have a base load of base customers of smelters in the Richards Bay area, and we are focusing also on that particular transmission corridor to make sure it can be strengthened and be able to support the development that is happening in that region. At a municipal area, which is an important aspect, we also speak to the restructuring of the distribution sector. We have noticed a backlog in both maintenance and refurbishment in the municipal area, and we are seeing an increased number of interruptions in that area, which is related to the issue of backlog of maintenance and refurbishment, and it's an area which we want to suggest we need to focus on. So the end result of all this is that we have a power system that is very vulnerable to unplanned events. A power system with a higher and increased probability of power interruptions and load shedding. And in the next 5 to 8 years, we will find ourselves in this situation. And we have to respond as a country in a different way from the past to be able to survive this without major ramifications. Our response, and I think probably the country's response, has to be increased energy efficiency drive. We have targeted a number of 3,000 megawatts of energy efficiency by 2012. 3,000 megawatts is equivalent to saving a power station. If we are able to decrease the demand, we'll save a building of a full power station. The other response strategy is to maintain and improve on current levels of plant performance. The challenge, of course, is that currently when you look at our plant performance, compared and benchmarked with international norms, we are up there. So the effort to go beyond is not an insignificant effort. And in the context of maintenance windows that are constrained, demand that is rising, the improvement on current levels of plant performance, it's a big challenge. Robust national contingency planning and emergency preparedness in the event of power outages. In the past 24 months, out of the Western Cape event, I think we have learned hard lessons in terms of how you mobilize society around contingencies. And I think those lessons we have now hardwired nationally so that if events happen, we can communicate, rally, and mobilize in a way that the inconvenience is contained. We're accelerating our capacity expansion. In the previous 5-year window, our plan was 97 billion. As we advance in the window, the 5-year window, the current window is 150 billion. And as we move to the next window, it will go beyond 200 billion in the 5-year window. The total plan over the next 20 years is in excess of 1 trillion to 1.3 trillion that we need to put on the ground to bring capacity to the power system. The last issue is to mobilize partners and stakeholders, because the challenge we're facing in the power system is not only an Eskom system, Eskom problem, it is a national challenge. And hence, we are thinking and talking to stakeholders to partner in dealing with this major challenge in the next 5 to 8 years. Breaking down the 150 billion in terms of where it's going to be spent, the bulk of it, 70% of it is going to be in the generation sector, the building of power stations, but also in the transmission sector, 14%, and equal also in distribution, 14%. And a small amount in research and development. And the research and development is also focused on the issues of renewable energy, which is going to be a key part of our generation mix going forward. And on the next, in the next 5 years, we will spending on average 15 million a working hour. And I think that's going to be a very huge challenge. And in the global context, I think one of the biggest capital expansion program in the world. The building program is advancing. We have this year commissioned the open cycle gas turbine in the Cape, 1,000 megawatts of open cycle gas turbine. That begins to give a high level of security in the Cape, and as the chairman has indicated, but these are standby generators. But however, if we have a cooler problem, we have a better chance of not infecting customers. But over the next 20 years, as I've indicated, we are doubling up the size of Eskom. We are building 40,000 megawatts at an estimated cost of 1.3 trillion. We are also having our old power stations, the mothball power stations. We are generating over 1,000 megawatts as we speak from those power stations, and in terms of transmission lines, we have added about 430 kilometers of transmission lines to the system in the past year. We have cancelled on the one of the biggest power stations in South Africa, and certainly it's going to be the biggest in the world, the construction of the Mbilwi power station in the Limpopo Lephalale. It started in May 2007. We started construction on what is called a pump storage scheme in KZN called Ingula. We have received reports of decision on the next coal station after Mbilwi, which is Bravo, and we believe third quarter of next year we will start the construction of that particular power station. In the Cape, we'll be doubling up on the current gas turbines that we have commissioned, and we call them gas ones, to bring more capacity to the Cape. And as and when we undertake this commercial process, we're making sure that we hardwire the ASCISA requirements in the project by bringing in and maximizing black economic empowerment, by making sure that the suppliers can commit to small and medium enterprise development, black women-owned procurement, and also to hardwire the targets for the suppliers to contribute to skills development. The other aspect of ESCOM, and it's been our aspect since 1994, that of transforming the racial mix of both our middle management and senior management. From the racial balance point of view, we now have our senior, middle to senior management, 63% of those come from previously disadvantaged individuals. Gender equity, supervisors, managers and professionals are now making up 33% of the cadre of that leadership pool of ESCOM. The other element which we also began to focus on is employees with disabilities. We've just hit the 3% in that category. Education and training. We've invested in this period 748 million. We now have 1,722 bursaries and scholarships. We have brought in 1,738 learnerships, people that we bring into our system and give them technical experiential learning. Some of them we keep for our own use. Some of them we release to the market to increase the school skills pool in South Africa. We also have 1,676 graduates and learners in training in our system. We also are looking at increasing the qualitative and quantitative focus on leadership, technical and engineering sector, and the last part is the artisan training, which is beginning to be one of the biggest challenges that we have to deal with in the context of the growing base of our class. The artisans and training, we are doubling up on the training of artisans. We are collaborating with other companies that play in space, the subtles, the metal fields, to say how do we optimize on the artisan training to respond to the growing demand of those skills. Safety remains and will continue to be an important part of our operations. We employ 32,000 employees, and it is our intention that every day, all of us return to our homes safe. However, regrettably, in this period that we're reporting, we lost 8 employees, we've lost 18 contractor employees, and we've lost 41 members of the public who either have come into contact with our infrastructure or been injured by activities associated with our operations. This is an area which is a very sad area, it's a very painful area, and it is our intention, right from the board to the management, to make sure that we focus and we can come and report that we have not lost any lives. But we are partnering with employees, contractors, and the public to intensify the safety improvement activities. We're also have applied the services of DuPont, who are seen as a global leader in assisting other companies to improve their safety. And we're beginning to see some improvements. But until we can sit here and come and say, no employee this year has died in its employ, we believe we still have a big challenge. And it's an area which as leadership we take very, very seriously. Procurement, Black Economic Empowerment Procurement, we have spent $16.6 billion with entities that are considered Black empowered entities. In it, it includes $2.1 billion which we have spent with Black women-owned enterprises. And this area is growing, and what we will be doing, we've been reporting in a way that we have been reporting for the past few years, but with the codes, we'll be adjusting our reporting to the codes that have been published by the DTI. The diversification of our energy mix going forward, we are giving you a picture, an existing picture of where we are and where we're likely to be by 2025. The power system is a long-term business. You have to plan in 20 to 50 year horizon. When we look at the horizon up to 2025, we are seeing that coal is still a big contributor, but our intention is to reduce our dependence on coal and to begin to reduce our footprint in terms of carbon emissions. So we'll be looking at renewables, we'll be looking at hydro and its imports, and we'll be supporting the Department of Mineral Energy in the development of the nuclear portfolio. And over the next few months, communication and announcements will be made in terms of the nuclear program. Towards the conclusion, chairpersons and members, when you look at the power system today, one can quantify two strategic challenges that we have to tackle. The first one, in the context of a constrained supply and demand, is to ensure that the lights keep burning. In the past, we had excess capacity. That excess capacity has been depleted. In the next 5 to 8 years, we will live in a very constrained demand-supply environment. The effort to keep the lights burning is going to be a big effort. We have a very big capital expansion. To execute that capital expansion is going to require collaborations with many stakeholders. But one of the biggest challenges, as we begin to engage with suppliers, we begin to discover that the whole world is also doing the same. So as we expect more people to come and bid, we're actually finding that very few companies that we expect to bid for our power stations are doing so, because the whole world is constrained in terms of supply. And as you execute a big program, $1.3 trillion in the next 20 years, the issues of cost overruns, time overruns, are issues that we need to focus on. And that is going to be a big effort on our part and the part of South Africa. Maintaining the financial sustainability of Eskom, past 20 years we didn't have to build, we could supply the additional capacity, the additional demand in the nation without building any power station. Now we have to build new power stations, and one power station comes at the price of half of our entire asset base. Our entire asset base is about $140 billion. One power station is about $80 billion. To be able to afford this big capex, what it means is the cost of electricity that we are accustomed to will have to go up. And all the indications and all the sums we've made is that the cost will go up. To make sure that we still have a financially sound power system that can support the growth of this economy. We have to respond to climate change. Climate change globally is a big topic. How do we ensure that we can reduce the carbon emissions that will cause, if we not reduce, will cause global warming that will have far-reaching impact on all of us and the generations to come. So as Eskom, we're taking a proactive stance. As we make this investment, we have to make the investment that also responds to the issue of climate change. Hence, the chairman has indicated that as we make this 60 to 70 year old, 70 year project investment, in it we have to begin to say, how do we do it in such a way it contributes to the reduction of CO2 emissions? And we take this as a big strategic element that is facing us during this period. The implementation of the EDR restructuring, we've been talking about this. At ESCOM, half of our business is in distribution, and it's our intention to make sure that we can support the restructuring and can support the migration from where we are to a better dispensation. And we're working with all the stakeholders to make sure that the inputs are there and the platform is there, that if we go this route, it's done in a way that we get a better product than what we have. And lastly, ladies and gentlemen, we have to acknowledge that in the past 24 months, 18 months, with the Western Cape issues, we have to acknowledge that there's been questions that have been raised about the power systems, where we're going, and it's our intention to make sure that collectively we can restore the confidence in the system. And ESCOM, because it's important moving forward that the confidence in the power system does not erode the confidence in the economy. And we take this very, very seriously. But we acknowledge that as we do this, we do it in a context or a power system that is constrained. So it's going to require for all of us to be transparent and honest about where we are and take everybody in our confidence so that we can collectively deal with the issues that we need to deal with. So what can you expect of ESCOM into the future? We'll continue to play a leading role in the electricity sector to support this high economic growth in South Africa. Since 1994, the power system has grown by 50%. That is the direct relation from what has happened in the economy, and it's important that at ESCOM we continue to play our part in supporting that growth. We believe South Africa will remain an attractive investment destination as much as prices will and have to go up. We believe the gap that we have with our competitors will keep us competitive in terms of energy-intensive industry, and we will continue to support that. We believe it's a challenge, but we believe the objective of capacity expansion program will be achieved, but it will require all of us to work together, and we believe we will deliver on our commitments to our customers, and importantly, and partner with all our stakeholders in achieving this challenging but exciting future for ESCOM and the party. Chairman, Chairperson, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much, and we will now take questions that you may have on the presentation. Thank you very much.
I'll hand over to you, Chairperson. But just before that, before questions, I'm just looking at the recommissioned power stations which were mothballed then in the 80s, the three of them. In the report here, they come that Komati and Fort Flay, perhaps as we get into discussion, we should get a feedback, but it's good that we get a feedback here on Camden, because we undertook a visit here, and at the time it was one unit which was up and running. If you can also be able to deal with that, because it deals with the heart of the problem as it relates to electricity and supply in the country, which is the generation a part of the value chain of electricity. Okay, Commissioner.
thank you. Thank you, Co-Chair. And we've now come to the part where hopefully people will engage and feel free to do so. What I thought we should do is, given that the annual report has been with us for a while, and I must say it's probably one of the more comprehensive annual reports I've read for a long time. And yet went blind given the fact that I now use low wattage bulbs to read. The print is rather small. And luckily you don't have a colleague of mine called by the name of Michael Matsuta in this committee, because he'd give you hell for the small print. But having said all of that, I thought what we should do is to break the discussion down into different categories. And I'm going to open a discussion initially on the financial issues, as well as perhaps the generation, the power generation crisis and the capacity crisis that you spoke to in your presentation, particularly the financial issues going forward, because clearly those become enormous challenges in terms of the sourcing of funds, and it has enormous implications both for you as an institution, but also for the country as a whole in terms of the possibilities in terms of inflation increases and the affordability of electricity going forward. So questions, members, on these issues, financials as well as the increase in capacity in terms of the capital requirements. I'll take show of hands. I don't have a list of members. Perhaps if they aren't any takers, I'll start from the chair. Do I have a taker? Oh, sorry. That question was this. The other view of the DA. I don't know why the co-chair put it there deliberately, probably. let's start with Mr. Sandaik. I've got Mr. Gololo, Ms. Nkondo, and you'll note. Okay, thank you very much. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson. So, are we to ask only now questions on the financial matters?
Yeah. Let me just tell you the categories so that you can then deal with those. You then have when I talk about the capacity crisis going forward, it includes the planning aspects and so on. So you can ask questions on that now. You then have the emissions, carbon emissions, and the climate change challenges. The safety issues, and then we'll have a general session where you can ask any of the questions that you want to pose, particularly around human resources and any other general matter. I think that's going to assist us in our discussions going forward. Okay?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, ESCOM mentioned a possible 18% increase in electricity tariffs. That's about 12% higher than the inflation rate. Now, in this regard, ESCOM will make no contribution to assist the monetary and fiscal policy in South Africa to keep inflation below 6%. That's the first argument. Secondly, ESCOM made a 6.5 billion profit according to your presentation in the financial year. Why then the proposed increase? Why not redirect profits back into production? And thirdly on this, did ESCOM ever consider to approach Treasury via the Department for Public Enterprises for financial assistance from the expected 17 to 26 billion tax revenue overruns for the financial year? Chairperson, then, as far as the financial losses concerned, I just want to ask, because nothing has been said about cable theft, that's part of your losses, in kilometers or rand value, and then I want to know your risk management to prevent this. How many risk management meetings are scheduled for the board of directors per annum? Chairperson, I think the other question that I would like to ask is also appropriate in this regard. There is a huge uncertainty about Eskom's early warning system. I want to know what measures are in place to secure...
Now, is that part of this category?
Well, as I understand, your capacity problem.
Early warning system in terms of the capacity
problem. Okay. I just want to know what measures are in place to secure that Eskom can plan in advance and to avoid the shortage of power supply. And I'll tell you why, Chairperson. To tell the public that power outages are due to cold weather or because of wet coal is absolutely unacceptable. In fact, the public, if we read in the newspapers, are laughing to these arguments because we have the South African Weather Bureau who provide weather forecasts almost a week in advance. And secondly, how can all the coal be out in the open? Are they not stored, you know, undercover? So what are you going to do about your ineffective early warning system in this regard? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I think on those questions, on the issue of cable theft, I think also add the issue of illegal connections, and you can speak to that issue as a whole, please. Mr. Gololo is next.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I've got two questions here. The first one will be on the economy, that our economy is growing tremendously, and there is a lot of money that is going to be spent in the next 20 years, about 1.3 trillion rand. A lot of money in that regard. And I just want to ask if are there any plans of building more power stations, like for instance what is happening in China, where they are building about 500 every year. I just want to find out from Eskom. And then the second question, Jefferson, would be, I don't know, I'm not sure whether it's on financials, but it's on electrification. That is about 152,125 new connections. And then I'm not sure whether, out of that figure, how many are connections in the rural areas? Because I know for sure that the majority of these connections are in the urban area. Thank you very much.
Okay, I've got
Chairperson, thank you. In the categorization of questions, I'll leave it to you. If it doesn't belong to the categories that we're dealing with currently, will you please slot it in during the relevant time? Say, the first one is on the expansion program. It's quite interesting and a promising program in terms of, and especially on the progress thus far. But what I've not been able to get in the report itself, while the expansion program is on its targets, etc., and they hope indeed that it will indeed meet its targets by the time it is supposed to be finished, there is this continuous challenge of the reserve margin, which has been under 10%. For quite some time compared to the 15% international standard. But what I don't get in the report is, where is the link between this expansion program and seeing some kind of, you know, an increase in terms of our reserve margin, so that we have an idea during this expansion period as to where our expansion reserve margin is going to be. or whether we are still to be faced with the challenge of a reserve margin that is not yet very close to the international standard. That's the first question. The second one, Chair, relates to the price increases. Is it still in this category? Oh, good. You know, the chairperson knows me in finances, but I won't get it. On the possibility of price increases, what is the view of ESCOM with the price increases vis-a-vis the economic conditions of the majority of South Africans who currently, most of them, qualify for the free basic electricity? How are we going to manage that process? Or is our focus going to be on the other stakeholders, like your industrial sector? The last one, Chair, for now, safety issues. Am I still there? Okay. Thank you, Chair. All right.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, mine is on the BEE. I'm interested about this BEE. Every time you find there are women on the BEE, but I don't remember coming across these women. You go to, you ask anybody from any province about the women in this, but we never find them. I'm just interested to know, where are these women? That's what I wanted to know. And the next one, I think, is for Ajayn on the stage. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got a few questions. The first one is on slide number 5, or I would say page 5 on top, where there is a decline on the group profit after tax. As what could be the cause? That's the first one. The second one is on understanding that my perception is the fact that domestic customers who are ESCOM customers are currently paying more than municipal supply. Those who are in the township where the supply is the municipality, they pay less than the domestic customers who are directly ESCOM's customers. Now, looking at the future transformation of the industry, more especially with the supplier side of things, would it make any difference? Would it be meaning that the tariffs would be the ESCOM one, or would it make any difference? Are there some who may be worse? Because I'm looking at the comparison. But the last one is, if we could have been able to get a report which could assist us as to whether you've been able to reach target versus the backlog. If you look at the three provinces that are where the majority of the backlog is coming from, how much of the connections have gone towards those provinces? Because we can understand that the backlog is more concentrated in the three provinces. And out of this financial year, how much dent has been made? And how much finance and funding that is destined towards this province that has been spent? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. My question has been covered. First, I was going to ask the same question of the new connection, especially in the rural area. But I would like to comment on the your employment equity. I'm also serving in the labor portfolio.
We want to hold that discussion for later. We're coming back to those okay. issues here. Have another question on this aspect? No? Mr. Nene?
No.
Okay, we'll come back to you. I'll note you for that session. Mr. Kikana?
Mine is also on the reserve margin. It wasn't very clear. You see, the question that you're asking about the reserve margin is that you can understand that ESCOM needs to build more supply and there's more demand for it, so electricity in South Africa, which is a good thing. But the worrying factor is up until your big power stations are running, it looks like there's going to be shortage. Because you can't supply the demand required. So the big question is, those reserve margins, the big question is, can they cope in the interim? Because we're told that the power station, the biggest that is there, I think it's in Limpopo, will take about 7 years. Now, between now and 7 years, you know, I come from Soweto, and in Orlando, it's during winter. There were so many outages that people are now and then phoning us, explain this. I mean, our winter is terrible. Now, I'm just saying that I don't know if, you know, the financial report is very good on paper, but I'm saying that in practice, if you ask consumers and say to them, how do you feel about ESCOM? There are many areas in South Africa where you get that outrage that people feel ESCOM is letting them down, they are not getting the required electricity and so on. So the reserve margin, is it going to cope in the interim period while we're waiting for the main production of electricity, the building of the main power station to be completed? That's the question.
How many more power outages are we expecting? So you have a whole web of questions. You can parcel it out as you wish, Chairperson, CEO, and so on. Over to you.
I'll deal with the easy question. How it works when you are the chair. I want to just comment a little bit about the reserve margin issue, because it has come up with a number of questions, and but the chair said I must press this button. I should have. No, I the reserve margin issue is, the reserve margin is not going to improve in the next 5 to 7 years, and which therefore means that if the demand for electricity continues to increase, there will not be the supply. Not a very complicated matter. It means that the country will have to not increase its consumption of electricity or its demand for electricity.
At a particular day, the demand for electricity is greater than all the power generation at work on that day. It means that the demand cannot be matched. And somebody will have to be told, no, you can't have electricity. I'm simplifying it, but it's actually not all that much more complicated than that. And there is a very direct relationship, actually, between the weather and the demand. People demand demand more electricity on days when they wake up and they're being sold. It's just a fact of life. They put on their heaters, they cook more warm food, and they boil their kettles more often. And so there's a direct relationship between temperature and the demand for electricity. The temperature prediction can be made long term, and within ESCOM you have a multi-year prediction of what the demand would be every hour for a number of years. If they go into those jobs, therefore for the next 3, 4, 5 years there would be a prediction, a forecast on what the demand would be for every hour of those years. And you can always see that during the winter months the demand would be at its highest. So what happens during that time is all the power stations work flat out during the year. But of course a power station cannot work all the time. Some point in time it has to be changed, has to be stopped. So that switching off takes place over in a phased manner during the summer months. When the demand is lower, then power stations go on the maintenance. Now if you take the month of October for example, it's normally a warmish month. But if you have freak weather, you know, for 3 or 4 days in October you suddenly have very cold weather, which is not predicted by anybody. And the weather bureau, you know, can't tell you exactly what's going to happen during that time. Then you find that power stations will be switched off, but the demand has gone up. So somebody will then have to be told you can't have your supply. And it's a there's a protocol of how this is done. The first people that are switched on are not your women, not your household. But lots of other things happen before you reach that point. The first thing that you do is you look at the contract that you have with industrial users. The big industrial customers, many of them have contracts which in the contract say that if you are short of power, ESCOM will cut you off first. Of course, there's protocols as to for how long you can cut off, and what units and what protocols you follow. So some of the big units are the ones that have to get cut off first. Then there are other big industrial users from whom ESCOM purchases power. In other words, it says that we have a contract to supply you X amount. We're running short of power today. Can we switch you off? And we'll pay you for the amount that we're not giving you. It's a way of purchasing power back. So there's a whole buyback program that is going on. An army of people who work on these things on days like that. And then what happens is that you run your feed plant to begin with an OCGT like the one that left. You can't run it for too long. If you run it for 20 hours continuously, all the diesel that is stored underground there will be used up. And there is no logistical way to bring in diesel fast enough to keep it running. Even if you have continuous flow of chemicals coming in, you can't And then there's the pump substation, which stores energy in the Gartensburg, for example, that's the dams, the upper dams are beneath the water run through the turbine, and that brings on additional power. All of those things happen. If you are so short of power, then you have to take the decision to switch off the domestic solution. And of course, this is a new thing for South Africa. And as the chief executive has said, really a new field of activity going to be. And what we're hoping that it would be possible to do with the big people of early when it's possible. And to switch off the message user for a shorter period of time as possible, so that you minimize the inconvenience. So to say to somebody that your life will be off for 2 hours if you use this time in the early morning for that. That requires quite a high degree of coordination with municipal decisions. In many areas, the actual distribution is done by municipal authorities. As some would say, the intelligence, we need to give you so much depth during this time and this time. That municipality then will have to find a way, it will be short of 10%, we'll have to find a way of picking up 10% of the structure in a manner which is predictable and easy. That's the fine tuning, I think, that the government needs to try to work around, so it will ensure that there's predictability. But that's what happens. So she goes to all of that. So when domestic users are being picked up, they are in there on that day. If a big power station is switched off for maintenance, and there's a sudden shortage of power, it cannot be brought on stream immediately. It takes a number of days for a power station, a big power station, to fire up again. So I don't know if I've dealt with this in terms of mining. In other words, that it's not. That it is the shortage of power, and I think that's something that has got to be understood. There's a number of ways of dealing with it. I think the chairperson working up is asked about the general service agency, which is basically very important now. But there's a number of new capacities that are coming from the stream all the time. These will not be sufficient. What will help the great deal is to reduce demand. In other words, if we use that electricity, it will make quite a big difference to the reserve margin and the ability not to have major consequences. We are of the view that the consequences are not going to be major. It's not going to impact on the economy, on economic growth, on job creation, or very significantly inconvenient lifestyle. That would be what we do. It's unlikely to happen. The message that must go out is that next year there will be a greater demand than this year, and there will be a bigger shortage. And that's how things are going to be for the foreseeable future. As far as price increases are concerned, in all of the price increases, there should be no need to impact negatively on those that are beneficiaries of free basic services. There should be no need at all. And in all of the pricing questions that we go forward, that has been taken as a given. That is national policy, we have free basic services, and that will be incorporated as we go forward. There's a number of ways in which South Africa can fund its need for new power stations. There's a whole variety of ways to do it. And it's really a matter of national policy as to how we do it. One of the ways is to have tariffs, and there's other ways of Parliament devoting money. There's different ways of doing it. Each method that one uses has an impact on the economy in a different way. And I think it's important for us to ensure as a nation that we introduce as few distortions as possible in the economy and in economic policy. One could say, for example, that let the general taxpayer out of taxpayers' money that is collected funds the growth in electricity demand. Some countries do that, and it will not be, will not necessarily be a right or a wrong way to do it in a different way. All one can say is that the user of funds the volume of the population. That would be a good way. And that's a way we think that you might be as opposed, in other words, that we can see that as something. Once you ask somebody else to fund somebody else, a different person's use of the product, introducing a kind of a subsidy, which probably is necessary because we have a lot of poor people and we have a developing economy and we have a developmental state. But the extent to which you do that can introduce unnecessary resources. For example, it could encourage the use of electricity among certain users in a manner that can be avoided if the pricing is not right. The other thing is to look at the financial health of Eskom. Eskom is one of the top 10 electricity companies in the world, globally speaking. And it is one of the top companies in South Africa, state or private, in terms of its revenue and its size and scale and workforce. It should be in the interest of everybody as we go forward in building power stations to maintain strong financial health of Eskom. If you find that the amount of money that Eskom spends on building power stations is not in keeping with its income, any banker that looks at Eskom would not want to give it credit. It's like if you go for a home loan and they look at your empty salary, which of course I think should be increased, I think it's an increase. But if they look at your salary and they look at what you're trying to buy, and they'll say you're not going to be able to pay for this, they'll always give you the money. Unless it's a irresponsible bank like the US bank, and that's why they've got the subprime crisis, because they need increase. So when we go globally, raise capital for the program, what do we say? Let's look at your income. How do you expect to fund this business? And it therefore means that if you want to grow power stations, you will have to either ensure that Eskom has the requisite income or that Parliament votes number of budget to fund power stations. There's not too many other different ways of doing it. One of the interesting things that's come out of government policy is the private sector building power stations. Independent power producers, which we think is a good idea. If the private sector goes power station, Eskom would buy more of the supply and engage a power purchase agreement. This is happening on a rather relative scale at this stage. If it does happen, it would be a good idea. At this stage, Parliament last year, we didn't think the private sector was indicating strongly that this is something that's going to happen in a big way. But if it does happen, that will be also be a good idea. The final point that the chairperson wants to talk about is the electrification topic. We've taken a look at the ability of this country to complete the electrification program. We've come quite a long way since 1994. Most South Africans buy electricity, including in rural areas, villages, etc. But we have to complete the last mile. It can be done, and we are of the view that it can be done by 2012. By 2012, all South African homes can be electrified. And hopefully that's something that will happen. The electrification program is funded through the budget, and the speed with which electrification takes place is determined by the amount of money that goes for electrification. And we think that if right amount of money about for electrification over the next few days, by 50,000 is something that can be done. So it's something that we've done, and we think that even though the last of the electrification, the homes that have to be electrified, will be partly completely zero, really something that can be achieved. And it's a wonderful thing for the country that that can be achieved. And that's independent of the shortage of generation capacity, because those homes actually don't use large, are not big electricity users, and a lot of the, those that are now being for electrification are actually put into the free basic services. So that's something that we hope can be done. But there were many questions, complicated ones.
Yeah, I mean, the chairman has been constantly on some issues with their margins. I mean, one or two things on that that maybe we try to address, that is constantly answer. The issue that chairman about the challenges, I can give you an update. We have three power stations that have been mothballed, which we are building there. Hamlin is the first one. We now have five units has come this afternoon, which is about 1,000 megawatts. By the end of this month, we'll have one of the units at full stage running, and we hope that by 2011, we'll have all the units of the three power stations running, and in total, they will bring 3,600 megawatts to the system. And we may need progress on that. In terms of financial the issue about redirecting profits to the agent and therefore requiring less sales increase of product for money into detail. However, the first thing is to say the number of power stations that needs to build, that is in front of us, I can't say it's the big cost that is impacted by. The current rules are such that you apply to the regulator for the tariff and the revenue required to fund that agent. That's the current rules. However, if I'm the regulator or the policymaker, have a different view of how to fund it, that will appear to have gone. We are applying current rules in terms of how do you find the cost of both running the hydro operation and adding capital to the hydro operation? And we have done that in the regulatory extension, but they have listened to us for December, and we have applied it within the hydro group. However, it's a prerogative of the policymakers to say, maybe to find a different model, and of course, we fall in with that model once it's decided. There's an issue about risk management, and it links to the issue of cable terms. I'm not saying I cannot give you the details in terms of cost and kilometers now that we have brought to the committee, but it's an issue that receives serious attention because it's both a financial issue, but it's a financial issue, it's a critical supply issue we have is a cost of interruption. But last year in this century, people died because of cable theft. Those who perpetrated, and in some cases, even the people who perpetrated, where our infrastructure is compromised, is open and is blind, and in some cases, we lost children because of cable theft. The area, this is a thing. This management of the board, because this management committee of the board is made coverage 6 times a year, is considered all risk, and we have a risk management framework, which we apply and employed, and in the annual report is reported on, and how many times that committee meets also reported. The expectation in rural areas, I can report for giving specifics that yes, in the initial period of electrification, the focus was in the heavy areas. But currently, the majority of what we do is in the rural areas. And those steps, the Department of relationship. We managed to hold focus to levels that at least with five we can provide. Five increases in terms of money conditions of reduced South Africa, and the chairman has indicated the issue of free basic electricity. I think there's an issue about what is the cost of making electricity. That must be reflected fairly without any distortion. There's a socio-economic imperative that how do we make sure that from the basic service, how can we kind of subsidize or support vulnerable communities with access? And I think those two are different issues. And in particular here, the free basic electricity where policymakers of the fiscal have to get the best of supporting low-income households to access free basic electricity. I think it's the right thing. I think in the context of this, the issue is also going to be how do we do that from the system. VDE and where are the black media and red media? I don't know how to answer that one. I think I'll give a point on how to, maybe we'll bring a contingent next time. I think we're waiting how to, and I'm really actually providing us with information to give us the confidence that indeed what we report is really.
And maybe just a profile of the
state. So I'm going to make an engagement in terms of how we do that.
You just give it to us in written format.
In written format, yes. The declining good profit after tax from last year to this year. The government could deal with that. Telecom customers pay more than the municipalities. Firstly, in the distribution sector, we have about 188 municipalities that supply electricity in the telecom. It's been estimated that there are about 2,000 different sectors.
Now, when you look at all of that, there will be municipalities that pay, that charges their customers more than Telecom. There will be those that charges their customers less than Eskom. One of the fundamental reasons why the EDI restructuring was undertaken or needs to be undertaken was to particularly address that issue. How do we make sure that customers, by and large, are treated equally, fairly, and equitably right across the country? So when we have rates, and the model of rates is that in a rate, there will be uniform tariffs, so that you don't have this various tariffs. Yes, there will be municipalities which are charging less than Eskom, but there are also municipalities that are charging more than Eskom. The issue is the uniform tariffs that we need to then, if we restructure in a rate, we give the uniform tariffs. The connections per province, especially the less connected ones, and again that can be provided, we don't have it at the top of our head, but you're correct. They are specific. I mean, I know, for instance, Limpopo is one of those that required attention. KZN, that's the one that required attention. Especially those provinces that have a bigger proportion of the rural population, and the allocation from DNE always takes into consideration those issues. And the chairperson is required, we can, through DNE, we can give more details. I mean, the issue of the reserve margin and Soweto outages, I think one is to clarify. The reserve margin talks to the production of power. The outages in places like Soweto, you find are likely to be local infrastructure problems. As I've indicated, particularly at municipal level, the issue about refurbishment and maintenance at the municipal level is an issue. As much as you may not have any problem at a particular time in the production of power, there is the delivery and distribution of power may be a problem because it's a local problem. And we've seen that begin to be an issue. And we're worried about that because as much as we can spend this amount of money building the power stations, if the last mile is not taken care of, the electricity may not arrive to its destination. And that's an issue that I think when you talk about the Soweto outages, you will find that at a distribution level, yes, some of the customers in Soweto are supplied from Eskom, but that will be a problem at a local distribution
Chairpersons, I think I have dealt with most of the questions. Maybe the issue about the cold weather and the wet coal, I think that also speaks to the reserve margin. If we had enough reserve margin, we would have the impact of wet coal, we'll have the impact of the weather, but we've got a lot of room to be able to take those without impacting customers. Now, we attempt to communicate to customers when things happen, what are the reasons? But the underlying fact that impacts on customers is reserve margin. Now, when an issue arises, we attempt to transfer it and say, because of the reserve margin and the fact that it was wet weather and wet cold, this is the impact. The second point, Mr. Chairperson, is that as much as we attempt to pre-warn customers, most times load shedding happens as a consequence of a sudden event. If a power station trips, it takes a few seconds for the power station to trip, and where else you've been comfortable in terms of being able to supply, you can move in a situation where you have to do load shedding very, very quickly. So the time is, you know, required to communicate, you don't have. In some cases we do and we attempt to do so, but it's not going to be possible in all cases to warn customers of any load shedding. And that's the nature of the business.
So maybe, Mugani, you want to deal with the financial question?
Okay. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chief Executive. If I can, before I deal with the detail of the financial questions, if you can indulge me, and then I briefly mention how we are regulated by NESA so that it gives perspective. I won't take a lot of time on it. ESCOM is regulated by NESA, and then the regulation is a three-year agreement, which is so-called multi-year price determination. The regulation seeks to give ESCOM a revenue requirement, but for ease of communication is communicated as a tariff increase in percentage. The way they arrive at that is they look at all our costs, be it cost of fuel and our costs, and then get recovery on those costs. And then as for our equipment, they give us a return on our equipment. And then that return is currently 7.3% and for on return on equipment. So it's basically we get a fixed revenue and then we have to live within those means as regulated. Now if I can then come to the specific question. The first question was why don't we use the funds from our operations to engage into CapEx? That's exactly what we're doing. As the Chief Executive presented, our cash generated by operations last year was 14.8 billion rand, but the CapEx was 17 billion, which means we used that cash for the CapEx. But that cash was not adequate to cover all the costs of the CapEx. As a result, you have to borrow on top of that. So as we go forward, as the CapEx program accelerates, there will be need to have a higher revenue base, but also there will be a need also to borrow more. But what we're also doing internally is to have an efficiency program. We have seen in the report that we saved over 700 million on procurement savings, and we aim to save about 7.4 billion over the next 4 years. The reason for this is that we want to demonstrate to the customers that we're not only looking up to customers and the government and borrowers to fund us, but we ourselves as ESCOM should be as efficient as possible. So we do use the cash from operations to deploy to CapEx. What has also been helping in previous years is in the last 2 years, the government has allowed us that we don't declare a dividend. Normal companies, other companies, even if you make a profit, they will ask you to declare a dividend. We have not declared a dividend in the last 2 years, and our shareholder, the government, has accepted that. So that's on the issue of CapEx. On the issue of inflation, yes, it will affect in inflation, but the dynamics we live in are not different to what they affect in the petrol price, because the price of crude is the price of crude. So if it was $30 a barrel 3 years ago and it's now close at 100, that's what we pay for the fuel. So the same dynamics apply to us. In terms of coal, if I can give coal as an example, the price of coal last year went up by 18%. This year it can go up by as high as 30%. And this is because the coal suppliers, which previously had got limited access to global markets because of the history of where we were as a country, now we can export even the low-grade coal. We have read in recent reports that they are exporting this low-grade coal to India. So it creates options for the coal suppliers. So there is huge pressure on coal. Here's our application to the regulator that for costs which are beyond our control, can we be able to make sure that we pass on those to customers, because we can't absorb costs not within our control. The other major increase in costs has been in the capital equipment. In the last 12 to 18 months, the price of power equipment, each boilers and turbines to build new power stations, has gone up by between 30% and 50%. This is because not only India building and China building, but it's a global phenomenon here in South Africa, in Europe, and in the United States. So it's very much a seller's market. And most of these power equipment suppliers around 1990s and early 2000s were in a difficult financial position, so obviously they did not increase capacity. But now it's very much a seller's market. Just reading in today's newspaper this morning, one of the major European suppliers, their profit from power equipment has struggled in their current reporting program, although they are making losses elsewhere. This is because it's very much a seller's market, because if you have a problem with the price, they say step aside, they'll give it to the next power company. So that's the global dynamics which we are in, which unfortunately we cannot escape, because there is a huge pressure on cost, both on our input cost on coal and on our power equipment. That leads to the next question of why is there declining profitability. The decline in profitability is largely driven by the increase in coal, because although with a higher demand, 4.9% compared to 2.8% the previous year, the price of coal increased significantly for the reason I stated earlier. But because we are, at the time, we are regulated that we can't pass, the price of coal is not a so-called pass-through. Pass-through means you pass on the cost to the customer, you don't get it yourself. So Eskom, in the last 2 years, has had to absorb about 6 billion additional costs, because we couldn't pass on to the customers because of the regulatory environment. But given the scale of this amount, we then made this application to the regulator, which is being considered as we speak now. Because in our view, it's not sustainable to continue absorbing all these costs when we've got such a colossal capital expenditure program. So that deals with declining profitability. The issue of cable itself, if the honorable member has got access to our annual report, I can refer you to page 91 of our annual report, which states that conductor theft losses fell to 14.9 million compared to 16 million the previous year, and involved 1,142 incidents compared to 449 incidents. Actions to combat conductor theft are managed by the Eskom Conductor Theft Committee in collaboration with other affected state enterprises and police. So we work together with Transnet and with Telkom and with the police. And one of the biggest scrap dealers in the country was actually in court because of this last year. And the reason for this also is with the commodity prices going up, the price of copper is probably 5 times what it was 4 years ago. So it increases the risk to this. But we continuously are vigilant on it to make sure that we can contain it as much as possible, because it's not only a question of saving the money, but it's a question of saving the lives, because some of these lives might be lifelines, and our people might be impacted by them.
And they're well covered. Thank you very much for that question. What T has been waiting for now about half an hour. So we're going with a very cold, and because we don't want to use excess energy, we're going to break now for tea. But my co-chair has got to leave, unfortunately, and he would just like to make a final comment. He'll come back on the session. I see other hands and so on. We'll continue, and we'll come back about 4:15. But over to you, co-chair.
Thank you, Chair. Actually, quickly, we would check what the Chair has said about this other engagement. But the slide on the comparison with other countries, we asked for that last year, on the issue of pricing. Wait a minute. On the issue of pricing, firstly, just to say that we only know ESCOM there. If you can just simplify who are these other entities, it's difficult. We won't know, because that will help us also in understanding these other countries. The second point on that is that this comparison is more on industrial customers. Would have wanted to know what is the situation as it relates to domestic customers, as it were, because that was the main area we were raising the point from. So that would actually help us. But even though this one, industrial customers also, does help us to get a feel what is happening in other countries, except that we need to say who's the KPLC, for instance. The second one, I think as long as we have the situation on the reserve margin, which we've alluded to for some time, I think we'll continue having problems. For now, let me start with the energy efficiency, which is one of the things which we are preaching. Actually, perhaps not enough, all of us should be doing that. The second one, chairperson of the board, is a bit of a contradiction. You see, when you say that you need to reduce demand in a growing economy, what is it that we are saying, actually? Because the very fact that the economy is growing, there is going to be this growth of demand, as it were. So inevitably, I can't see how this will happen in practice. You know, we can preach about the energy efficiency, but how do you go out and preach? No, look, reduce the demand. Maybe, I don't know, we'll have to be educated, Chair, on that. On crude, as the CFO has raised, you see, it won't give us the actual picture if we compare the crude on fuel and the crude as we understand it for generation, which is coal, because the availability of coal vis-a-vis the crude in oil are two different things in the context of South Africa. So I'm saying that perhaps the CFO would want to come back on this matter and further clarify, because you would see from the economies of scale that they really say two different things.
Okay, we'll break for tea. We'll take further questions on these and some follow-ups and so on. Please, could we come back? Could I ask that we come back at 5 minutes? Because we hope to adjourn at 1, and that leaves precious little time for meaningful engagement. So Can I request that people bring their tea in and then we continue as soon as possible? Thank you. That's your PDA.
Not the one.
That one, I'll do a closed session at the end at 1 o'clock. I'll ask the members to just stay behind and then we'll do a closed session. Number of consumers, or is it in fact consumers using more electricity over this period? Because clearly that has implications in terms of your assumptions or our assumptions going forward in terms of consumer behavior. Or is it a little bit of both? Have you actually done an analysis of what this increase pertains to? The second issue that I think underpins some of the discussions that we had earlier, clearly in terms of the tariffs, you can see that there's, being members of parliament, not a big surprise that there's a bit of skittishness about that aspect. The graphic comparison, that the comparative study that you've done with regard to other countries, and my co-chairs added to that, I think it would be useful in addition to less industrialized, more home-based consumers, if you do have that data, to compare that with those very same countries, but also include those countries' basic household incomes, so that we can see. I mean, it's wonderful to be compared with Canada and so on, but we clearly have a different profile as a country. So if that can be done, and if it could be done graphically, which always helps, because those of us who are illiterate and who have received an apartheid education, which is this person that you're looking at, we like pictures. Then the issue, as I say, that underpins the questions about reserve margins and so on, you'd forgive my going back to the 70s, where the planning aspect of Eskom historically has not been very strong. And I hear what the chairperson of the board says when he says, well, we're a completely new team and so on. But I think what the fears are, in terms of your plans going forward, is a degree of lack of certainty. Yes, over the next 5 years, you plan to extend $150 billion. We're not sure exactly what percentage, for example, of that goes towards your mothballing project, for example, compared to the actual investment in new capacity. And then, of course, it has implications in terms of the emissions and so on, because clearly in terms of your planning, one would expect going forward you would acknowledge the crisis in terms of global warming and so on, and one would want to plan up front now already. And clearly it seems that from the annual report, you're saying 70%. Of your reliance will still be coal-based in the next 5 years or longer for that matter. And really the question is whether in fact that is something that is necessarily the best way forward, given that we're not just talking about 70% of your capacity now, it will be 70% of your increased capacity in the future, which could be much more than what we're emitting today in real terms. So to just add to some of those questions, but I had Mr. Van Dijk earlier, got Mr. Kekana. Okay, in that order. And you can now go on to the next category of the climate change issues.
Chairperson, thank you. Actually, there's one follow-up just on what on the early warning. And also, I'm still waiting for a direct answer just whether they just approach the Treasury via the department for assistance from the tax revenue override. Just a yes or a no. Spoke in Texas in general. Just a follow-up on the early warning, Chairperson. Eskom has been accused of having informed the public too late about load scheduling, causing massive disruptions to the economy. Now, blackouts cost, according to research, the economy $8 billion per annum. But if I heard the chairperson of the board correctly, that he said it hasn't got a huge effect on the economy. But according to research, it costs $8 billion per annum to the economy. But I want to make a statement that Eskom has an inability to provide proper advance notice about load shedding, the so-called power cuts. And I want to refer to this, chairperson. On Friday, the 2nd of November, I phoned Eskom's customer care service at 086-003-7566 to complain on behalf of residents in the northern Sabazimbi area about blackouts there. The reference number that was given to me was 127-46186. And then the load shedding warning of 4 October was given by a tape recorder to me. I phoned them on 1 November, and then I get the load shedding information of a month ago. Now, you know, our load shedding warning was almost a month ago instead of in advance. How can you plan? How can the people, the irrigation farmers and all the business people, how can they plan in this regard? To warn the economy too late. Now, what measures do you have in place, Chairperson, if you come to the final question, to secure no power outages during the 2010 World Cup? And how will Eskom manage load shedding in 2010? Thank you.
Okay. I had Mr. Kekana first.
I just want to expand on this issue because we think it's such an important issue. You know, just putting things in perspective, when year was there, everybody, our economy said it is doing well, it is growing. If you take in what the economy was 1994 because of sanctions, political crisis, the economy was almost at 0 point. And by last year, by the time year was reviewed, it was said that we have grown between 4.5% and 5%. But then it was saying, because we were complaining about this economic growth that is jobless. In other words, an economic growth that is not addressing poverty. Then it was said, look, we need to grow up to 6% and more to create the needed jobs in South Africa. Now, I'm saying this because this is key, that we shifted from here and adopted AGISA. And we in Eskom, all of us, I mean, we can't just be doing things and saying things. Whatever we do and say must link up with the broader economic strategy that is there in the country. The economic strategy said infrastructure we are making, ports, rail lines, electricity, water, all those kind of things. And because of the economic growth. So we need to increase those because the economy is also increasing in its growth. Now, the point I'm making is when you say that, look, which is the regional margin can only cope if you don't increase demand. The point, you can't stop people from building houses. You can't stop people, Right now in mineral and energy, we're making a lot of noise about not exporting our raw material, but beneficiating in the country. Because we're hoping all the raw material that comes from agriculture and mining, if they were manufactured to the final product, if possible, right here, that would create a lot of jobs. Now, if you're going to don't increase demand, and you can't build manufacturing industry, especially heavy manufacturing industry, without increasing demand. Look, I'm not necessarily saying there are easy answers from you, but I'm saying when you answer, remember, we're looking forward for you to give us hope and be creative, rather than say, because what you are saying in essence, if you say don't increase demand, you are saying stop building houses, stop building shopping complexes, stop building manufacturing industry. Wait for 7 years until power stations or generation of power is there. And practically speaking, Mandela once said, you can't postpone people's hunger in the summer. We really have to cope with the situation concurrently as deal health as it is. And this is the innovation, I think, that you're looking for from ESCOM. Because you like it or not, the economy is growing, which is
thank
a good
thing. Thank you, Mr. Gekhan. I think you've made your point.
Okay.
Do you have another question, sir?
Yeah, last one.
Yeah, but try to make it brief this time.
Yeah. Just a comment. We want to congratulate Vali Musa because when you spoke about solar system, initially we were told, you know, you need technology from Germany, it is not viable. But we just see that ESCOM is now staying and saying that that is one area to be explored because there's a lot of sunshine in South Africa. Maybe if we're using it to the fullest, we could cope with all this demand for electricity.
I think you must exclude Cape Town in that sentence, and it's becoming more and more cold. It's November and I'm shivering. Mr. Mashlaba, I think I saw your hand.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, on the report, more on the safety side. I wish we could be able to get the comparison between the previous year and the current year. We saw the number, but now if we could just be able to get a feel of what is the previous, is it an increase or is it a decline? And the other one is on the impact of the EDI restructuring hiccups that have taken place to the plan that you've got.
I've got Mr. Gololo, and then I'll come back to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I wonder if I could ask you to take us.
I think you might as well. People are all over the place.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good night, sir.
Yeah. On HR, actually, Chairperson, I wanted to ask a question on HIV and AIDS. In that, on HIV and AIDS, I want to commend ESCOM on their effort of combating HIV and AIDS. I see that they are now reaching out to their suppliers as well. I just wanted to find out as to. $1,400. Yeah. And then on the disabilities as well, I wanted to find out as to whether the 3% growth of employment of people with disabilities, are they managers, they professionals, or is it across the board?
I've got Mama Sibela and then Kondo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine is also on the safety. I just wanted to, I wondered if we could get a breakdown of this incident of women, men, and so on. And the other thing is, here it says that we are partnering with employees, contractors, and public to intensify focus
on safety improvement. What I want to know is, has ESCOM never gone to make sure that the people who are working there are getting education from about the dangers in which they are working, and also the community, the public, no education for those people? That's what I just wanted to know. Thank you.
Chair, maybe just to add a question, by the way, on the safety issue. Whilst a serious, you know, and painful matter, as the CEO indicated, but what I wanted to have a sense of is the accidents themselves. Has ESCOM ever gone to an extent of trying to check what the real causes are? Could it be drivers that are reckless? Could it be drivers who work overtime that maybe are tired? What could really be the main causes of these accidents? Or is it the conditions of the cars themselves, etc.? But then the question I wanted to ask today was on the issue of skills, the skills retention challenge that both the chairperson and the CEO raised. I see that in terms of the report, there are quite a couple of million that have been used, 748 or somewhere there, I'm not quite sure of the actual figure, that has been used towards, you know, skills development. But skills, and also in one page, it indicated that maintenance had to be put to a hold because there were no bodies, or there were no people with the skills that were needed to perform that maintenance. It's somewhere in one of the pages of the report. But what I wanted to check, could this be related to the, I mean, I would assume the 748 million and any other monies that have been spent on skills development would have assisted ESCOM in having those skills. But still, you have a problem with retaining them. Could it be as a result of there being no retention policy? Or what could be the reason for you not being able to retain skills within the company when you spend so much in terms of ensuring that those skills do exist in the company? And the last one, Shane. No, that's the end.
Any other takers? Okay, so we'll then deal with that lot.
Chairperson, the first question I think relates to Chairperson of the Minerals and Energy around the comparisons, price comparisons using residential prices. Yes, indeed, I think it would be useful to get that. The only challenge with the residential prices, as we have seen in South Africa, we've got about 2,000 tariffs. So the benchmark in South Africa is exceptionally difficult. But indeed, we will attempt to give, I mean, I'm sure there are ways of...
Even if you just use the highest level and compare it.
So we will certainly do that. On the issue of increase in cash generated, I think Bongano can deal with that. Chairperson, you talked about long-term planning related to also the issue of climate change. Let me indicate that I think the biggest challenge in a utility is the fact that the things we plan by their very nature takes time to come to fruition. Let me just give an example. To decide you want a coal power station up to when you actually have it completed, that timeline can take you from 7 to 15 years. So if you're saying, for instance, we should have had a power station completed by today, it means that power station should have been decided in 1994. That's sort of the timeline we're talking about. Now, the kind of variables, therefore, that we have to take into account in planning that whether you need that power station, economic growth, currency, all of those issues that need to go into that planning, when you look at a 10 to 15 year time frame, you can only agree that you will be wrong. The question is how far wrong you going to be. Because we have a difficulty in knowing what the economic growth is going to be for next year. When you look at a 10 to 15 year time horizon, those variables become difficult to predict. So, as much as we do that in making sure that we have all those plans, we know that things would, you know, the reality will always be different from the assumption, and of course, how do we adjust? However, the issue that we raised around climate change, and I think the chairman has indicated, and maybe he can also elaborate. Yes, indeed, we are of the view that over the next 25 years, 50 years, our carbon footprint should reduce. Our carbon emissions should reduce. We are currently discussing and working around what that strategy should be. And hence, we are not taking a view that we will build all our power stations to be coal. We are actually saying what are other alternatives, particular alternatives, that will limit CO2 emissions. And over time, I think in the next few months, that will evolve. And as we talk to the policymakers, to say, hey, South Africa, this is our profile that we want in terms of eliminating or, in fact, reducing the CO2 emissions. And I think Chairman can add to that strategy, and I think he's already indicated that. Load sharing planning, and I indicate, Chairperson, is that as much as it is our endeavor to minimize the impact of inconvenience around load sharing so that we can be able to plan and warn people in advance, the issue is things happen in real time that cause you to load share, and the time is, you do not have the time in all the cases to be able to warn customers in advance. Load sharing by its very nature is a last resort, a last emergency resort to save the power system. In all cases, it's not possible to warn customers because it will happen in real time. And that's the reality, and we apologize in advance, but that's the reality. 2010, Chairperson, is an important aspect of our planning. We at ESCOM actually have appointed a senior executive whose job is to put plans to make sure that the 2010 from a power security point of view is secure. Those plans include where the Chairperson has indicated that in some cases we buy back capacity from customers. So we're looking at that period to actually go to customers. For this period, we'll buy back capacity from you in case you have problems. It includes accelerating certain projects, cogeneration, where we have customers, industrial customers that have the ability to generate electricity from their processes, to accelerate those that by 2010 we have additional capacity to deal with that. It includes the issue of identifying infrastructure in the municipalities where activities around the World Cup is going to happen and making sure that that infrastructure is secure. It includes making sure that stadia, the power supply to the stadia, the redundancy and bringing in local generation to the stadia so that for a stadium to, for the lights to go off, you would need three things to go wrong before you can get the lights down. That kind of redundancy and bringing in backup generators at the stadium. It also includes talking, collaborating with FIFA, going to Germany and talking to the Germans in terms of what they've done. So there are lots of activity to ensure that this important event, 2010, goes without any hitch. As much as it will happen in the context of a tight system, but we are, as we speak, focusing on what are the things we can do to make sure that the risk associated with supply for 2010 is mitigated. Innovation for growth, yes, I think I take Mr. Kekana's point that as much as we're talking about demand-side management, it cannot just be there's nothing we can do. I mean, we're talking about the reduction of demand, but it's indeed possible, Chairperson, that there is demand that we can reduce, but it does not impact on the economic activity. And the issue, for instance, of the residential load, focusing on water heating, it is possible to reduce the geyser load between 6 and 9 in the evening, and people can still have the water, hot water in the morning. But that reduction can have an impact of reducing the probability of load shedding. So the reduction we're talking about is that if we target areas where we can reduce without impacting economic activity or general social activity, we'll do so. The efficient lighting, we are rolling out lighting, efficient lighting, that will reduce the lighting demand across the country, but it will not impact on customers. We beginning to see large corporates with large office parks who have begun to have a different way of looking at lighting and energy saving for their office parks. And they can do it in such a way that it doesn't impact on their normal activity, but it contributes to energy efficiency. There are many things that are possible to do in reducing the demand without impacting on normal activity and without impacting the lives of people. On safety, eight people that you lose in a year is a lot of people. However, the eight compared to the other years is on the better side. The average is, you know, double digits in terms of fatalities per annum. We can show those figures. The previous year we reported was 10. It is coming down, but it's not coming down as fast. And until we can report that we have not had a fatality, we will never be happy. Every life is important. EDI hiccups have been impacted on the power supply system. In some cases, yes. In the municipal space, yes. The lack of certainty in terms of the ownership of the municipal assets do impact how some of the municipalities are looking at those assets. If you don't know whether you're going to be owning those assets, you're not going to be very excited in putting a lot of money in making sure that those assets are well maintained. So from that point of view, we're beginning to see some neglect in some municipalities related to the delay in EDI. So yes, it has impact in that space. The disability numbers that we're reporting right across the spectrum from, you know, it's a total employee number. So that's how we report it. Safety, education, and accidents. First, let me say that the safety steps that we're reporting, they not only relate to motor vehicle incidences. The major areas where we have concerns with safety, yes, is vehicle accidents. It also includes electrocution. Our employees, as they work on the infrastructure, they get electrocuted. That's another element. The third element, which is the three biggest categories, is where people fall from height, fall from the pilots, and that causes fatalities. In all of those areas, I mean, taking vehicles for instance, in vehicles we invest in what is called advanced driver training, that everybody who operates an ESCOM vehicle has to go through an advanced driver training. And there are a number of accredited suppliers that take people to defensive driving, what do you do, wet conditions, etc. And every year, that permit is actually renewed to make sure that people are alert in terms of what needs to happen. In execution, there is continuous education around the dangers of electricity and how we need to work and make sure that people are safe. So the education, not only is it happening, it gets intensified. And however, sadly, we still see that a lot needs to happen. Our view is that it has to do with discipline and culture, you know, where people get too familiar with the equipment and don't do what they know they should do. And that's the area we're focusing on, to make sure that safety is habitual rather than procedural. The issue of skills development and retention. Yes, we have a challenge in terms of skills for the new activity. However, we have not had a situation where we had delay maintenance or not do maintenance because we don't have the skills. Yes, in terms of the built environment, what we are discovering is that because the whole world is going through the build phase, our people are being targeted by international companies. When you go to the site where we are constructing, it is not unusual to find in the local paper an advert advertising project management jobs in the UK, in Australia, in an Emerald paper, for instance. Because these skills are global skills, and we have to compete with these companies, yes, we do have losses. And of course, we also look at what ways do we do, how do we retain, and it's not only about money, it's about conditions, it's about people feeling the belonging, and we're doing all we can in that regard. However, I can report that we cannot say that we have delayed or not done maintenance because we don't have the skills. In some cases, we augment our own skills with contractors, and that has contributed to us being able to execute the maintenance we needed to execute. Chairpersons, I think those are the questions. I don't know, Mongani, maybe you've got one or two that you may just have to...
I'd like to also ask Mr. Mwababa to, at the end of his input, to just give us an overview and a summary of the subsidiaries and their performances in a nutshell for us in the little time that we have left.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. If I can start by the question from Chairman Mthethwa on crude oil, if I can elaborate on why I was using crude oil as an example. I was using crude oil as an example because it's also a global commodity like resource equipment. So the example was, if the power equipment has gone up by higher than inflation globally, we cannot wish that away. But however, if I can then explain how does crude oil impact on our fuel cost, for example. The gas turbines which we run in Atlantis and the Mossel Bay use diesel. So the higher the fuel price, the higher the bill. But those are a small component of our fleet. The bulk of our fleet is coal. And coal is impacted indirectly also by the price of crude oil, because with the high price of crude oil, people use other sources of energy to heat. So they might be using coal instead of using fuel, for example. So that's why I was using crude oil as an example. On the question of have we applied to the National Treasury for capital injection, currently the way the policy is in terms of revenue requirement for Eskom is that the policy is the regulator gives us the revenues which we are required to meet our costs and our capital requirements. As for what is the mix between what goes to the customers and what the shareholder has provided, that's a policy issue which unfortunately we cannot pronounce.
You just in principle are opposed to giving a yes or no answer to Mr. van Dijk, is that right?
No, I'm coming to that. The answer is last year we did not, for that reason of regulation.
Well done.
We did not, but in future I can almost reassure you that given the scale of the CAPEX, shareholder injections will be part of the mix. Whether we'll prevail or not, that's another issue.
Okay.
And then on the issue of cash resources, why did the cash resources increase? I can refer
that to page 154 of our annual report. The main reason for that was that our working capital improved. What that means in simple terms is that our current liabilities increased at a faster rate than our current assets. Why that would happen is because of our terms which we have with our suppliers, and therefore we have liabilities longer than normal. That's why then there's almost a 2 billion benefit in working capital. So that's the reason why.
No, I think you're misunderstanding. The sales growth percentage is quite phenomenally high. And what I'm asking essentially is because you presume with your energy efficient usage measures and so on, that in fact these benefits are hopefully bearing some fruit. You're presuming that people are using less electricity. Is that a presumption that we can safely make based on the sales growth, or is that completely, does that figure not indicate any tendencies at all?
No, the sales growth, we can't look at that in isolation because we have to look at the cost element also, which would bring the cost down. Because if I can refer you to page 154 of the annual report, it clearly shows that before you talk of changes in working capital, it's almost comparison, the cash generated by the group from last year to this year. So the main reason why the cash generated is higher compared to last year is because of changes in working capital, which mainly is because the trade and other payables increase at a higher rate than assets. So it's a function of balance sheet management, not income statement, if I can put it simply.
We'll engage on a different occasion on that.
Okay. And then I think those cover the main issues. And just for the benefit of the members, as the chief executive has illustrated the statistics for safety and the reasons for safety, they are detailed on page 67 of the report. But they summarize what you say.
Just lastly, a question about who are the utilities that are we compared to SADC. From if you're looking at the slide from Eskom, and I'll just say the countries without going into.
Could we not have that on that same report that we asked you for with regard to the household stuff? I mean, you can just add to what we've got in our package. That would be good. Are you going to talk to the subsidiary?
Yes, if I can talk to the subsidiary. The members to page 96 of our annual report that shows the group results and the company results. The company results in the group in the group. You notice that the group results are about 450 million above the company results. This indicates that on a net basis, our subsidiaries are operating at a profit. And if I can touch on the main subsidiary, Rotex Industries, which does our refurbishment, is operating at a profit of over 200 million. And the Eskom Finance Company, which is the Rotex company, which was supporting us, also operating at a profit of about 30 million a year. And then the subsidiary, which made a loss, but we have spent around
on that very positive note, I'm going to take the opportunity to close the session now. With this rider, I said before that I think that a session of just 2 hours with an entity like Eskom is just far too little for us to get into any meaningful engagement. So you'll be put on notice that the next year we will ask you to spend the day with us at the very least in Parliament. But over and above that, what we do plan in the very early stages of next year, I can't give you any details because Parliament has no program. So what we will do is we will be planning a visit to some of your sites, at which point we will engage further on some of the financial terminology, shall I call it, your embedded derivatives. You can certainly explain that to us. But more importantly, and we will, with all seriousness, engage a little bit about the financials, because it's quite complicated to understand, I think, the bottom lines when it comes to the financials. And I do think that that exercise will be enormously empowering for members as a whole. The second issue, of course, that we will engage with you on is the planning going forward and some of the detail and some of the research on which you base your projections going forward. Because I think really what people are looking for is a degree of confidence. While we understand what you said earlier, CEO, that clearly nothing is certain, even your growth rates may change, I do think people just have to get a better sense of why it is you're saying what you are saying in terms of going forward. So those sessions will be planned in the early part of next year, and the committee will come down to you and engage with you at your offices and so on, and then hopefully take in some of the operations that you have going. And we'll engage with you further on specific dates and times. So on behalf of the committee, both committees, let me thank you all for being here. It's always very nice to engage with people that I think we have some sense that things are in competent hands, and we certainly appreciate the hard work and efforts of not just yourself, but every single person that makes this entity run, and I do hope that you convey that to your employees and your colleagues from our side. We often criticize quite a lot as politicians, and we forget that every single day people go to work and do their best, and these are very patriotic people, and so please do convey from our side our best wishes. There is lunch being served, and I'm going to ask Reneva, you know Parliament a little bit, but it's the restaurant here, if you could lead our guests to the restaurant. I just want the members of the Public Enterprises Committee to please stay behind for literally 2 minutes. There's some business that we have to do in closed session. So please, if the rest of you could just join us for lunch next door. I'm sure your equipment here will be safe if you left it behind. And we'll see that somebody locks the door when we leave. So please, the rest of you, if you could just leave as soon as possible. Mm-hmm.